Hello and welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, March 23rd, 2026. I am Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney, Zach Horowitz, Cassidy Palmer, and special guest David Welch. David, welcome back to Talking Hoosier Baseball.
I appreciate it all.
All right, the Hoosiers are coming off a 3-1 week, a winning week, in which they started off at the final piece of their road trip in Nashville, Tennessee at Vanderbilt. A very impressive 5-1 win. Connor Lynn was the starting pitcher. Ivan Mostalski stopped the one real opportunity that the Commodores had. Then they came back home for a series with Minnesota. Every one of these games, all three games, Indiana started down. The Friday game was down 4-0 before the Hoosiers even picked up a bat. But they scored two in that inning and then just gradually clawed their way back. And Gavin Siebold, with four innings, slammed the door shut, and the Hoosiers won on opening night. It wasn't as severe on Saturday. Tony Newbeck had actually an exceptional start. Did give up two runs, which were the first two runs scored in the game, but the Hoosiers scored the next seven. And some great performances. But really what was amazing there was that Isaac Morton, the Minnesota starter, was no hitting the Hoosiers through four innings. And Braden Ricketts, Cole Decker, and Jake Hanley all hit home runs in that fifth inning to score five runs, and the Hoosiers again cruised to a victory. Sunday was not near as fun. Brayton Thomas was struggling with command early. The Hoosiers fell behind in the Sunday Reds, and then kind of once they were behind with the bullpen being as depleted as it was from the rest of the series, went to some inning eaters and to give some guys that hadn't had an opportunity, which was actually a pretty nice experience to see some of these guys get out onto the mound. Evan O'Neill in particular had a 1-2-3 inning, which was nice to see. But the Hoosiers went down 14-2 in an 8-run run rule. So that was a didn't leave a great taste in the mouth to the end, but overall we're looking at a 3-1 week, which is a huge improvement over the conversations we have been having in the weeks prior. We welcome back David Welch, as it is almost time for Major League opening day, and David's going to talk to us about our Major League Hoosiers.
Yeah, and first of all, before I get started, I just want to pay tribute to Pro Ball Hoosier, who for who knows how many years has put together Major League Baseball stats or minor league baseball stats from all of our Hoosier alums and through every professional sport. So I know he's taking a little bit of a break, and hopefully he'll be back with some of that. But just give him a lot of credit for me just being involved in all of this to begin with. A lot of thanks to Pro Ball for all he's done to promote our Hoosier alumni. Looking at our Major League Hoosiers, I think there's some guys that we know that are just going to be, you can put them in pen in the lineup. The Phillies with Schwarber, he's going to be good for 40 to 50 homers this year, 100 RBI. I think Herron in Cleveland is going to be, pretty much solidified in that late inning, mid inning, sixth, seventh, maybe even a setup role as a left-hander. I think he had a little bit of struggles last year, but I mean, overall, he's a reliable lefty. That's he's gonna bring the heat, and has that knockout slider as well. Also, Kyle Hart has had a pretty impressive spring. I think one outing he had, he went a little bit more than two full innings, I think he struck out six out of his seven or eight outs that he recorded. Some of the other guys that we're looking at, I think Craig Yoho is going to be starting the season on the injured list with a calf strain. I think the Brewers are looking to get him back about mid-April or so. But I think he spent he made his debut last year. Spent a good amount of the season though in Triple-A Nashville. But I think he's going to play a bigger role in the Brewers pen this season. I think now he's trying to be too fine with some of his pitches, and walked a lot of batters at the major league level. But he was more than dominant at Triple-A. So I think Yoho, once healthy, will play a big role in the Brewers pen this year. The guy that's kind of had the rough go of it in spring training this year has been Tanner Gordon. He had a lights out spring with like a 1.64 ERA, with a WHIP under one. No, he had a strikeout to walk ratio of 12 to 2, and then he got optioned to Triple A Albuquerque, I think. Now he's one of the guys that, the Rockies didn't have a lot of great things going for them last year. Yeah, I think he may have been tied for their team league in wins, but I think he just fell victim to having options. So he got optioned down to Triple A to start the season, but I wouldn't expect him to be there very long. I think that as soon as the rotation spot opens up, or they get through this first push where sometimes teams just go with four starters for the first couple of weeks, I think you should see Tanner Gordon back up with the Rockies at the major league level. Also with the Rockies, McCabe Brown, I think he's come into camp with a shoulder issue. I don't know if I necessarily call it a injury per se. He's had some bullpens. I think he threw 20 pitches last week. I think he's scheduled to throw some breaking stuff this week at some point, and then he'll be reevaluated on his availability going forward. And I think our last one to look at would be Scott Efros. Had a run with the Tigers after three appearances, though he got shut down with a oblique strain. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what the Tigers do with him. And then one last one that I didn't want to leave out would be Jack Perkins. I think in the trade last year with Mason Miller that the A's traded away their closer. Perkins stepped up into a closer role for a few games and did pretty well in that spot. But it was right before they moved him into the starting rotation. I think there's some spots open in that pen, and the starting pitching that they got back in that Miller trade, might fill some of the spots that the A's have in the rotations. It's kind of like Perkins might be an odd man out at this point, but there's definitely a spot for him. If he doesn't make the starting rotation, I can definitely see him coming in the A's pen. Coming out of spring training, the Hoosier alums have gotten a lot of run. I think Elijah Dunham was in the lineup for the Angels in one game. I don't believe he got in. We did see, though, our friend Philip Glasser did get a decent number of at-bats in the spring with a major league club, as did Devin Taylor. And I even think Corbin Dickerson may have gotten an at-bat or two, or at least a few innings on the field. So, no, I think the future looks bright for a lot of the Hoosier pros at the major league level, and some of those are just ready to break through as well. Maybe they haven't made their debut, but they're kind of they're knocking on the door, waiting for their opportunity.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that update, David.
Oh.
All right. So now we turn to the current Hoosiers, and I guess we'll start where we normally do. And Cass, what have you got from us from a statistical point of view?
Yeah, so I went down a little bit of a niche rabbit hole after Sunday's game because it just felt like the bats were a bit more aggressive on Sunday compared to Friday and Saturday, and not to the greatest result ever. I mean, I know. Looks like it was a pitching problem with 14 runs given up. Those 14 runs really don't matter. Anything above three doesn't really matter when your offense only scores two. So I went through a few different kind of unique stats trying to get a good idea of level of aggressiveness over the weekend. And it's kind of a mixed bag, as it usually is when you're looking at more of a composite type of measure. Because game one had the most total plate appearances at 39, compared to 36 in game two and 31 in game three. That's kind of a broad measure. That could be getting a bunch of hits and maybe not bringing them around. Like, there's a lot of different things that can lead to a lot of plate appearances versus not a lot of plate appearances. There wasn't too much of a difference in the number of pitches seen per plate appearance, with 3.8 in game one and 3.4 and 3.5 in games two and three, respectively. Not a huge difference there. A little bit when you're looking at just that higher number of pitches, but not a big difference. I did want to take a look at the percent of plate appearances with fewer than three pitches or more than three, I guess three or fewer pitches versus more than three pitches. And with the general thought being, by and large, more pitches is better. Not always true, but by and large. And it was actually game two with the highest proportion of plate appearances being those shorter ones, at over half, 56% of them were three or fewer pitches, compared to 45 and 46% for games three and one. But I also wanted to kind of see what they were doing in those three pitch or fewer plate appearances. If you're swinging on first pitch and hitting a home run, I don't care that you didn't have seven pitches. And an interesting thing popped up where game one, which was overall kind of the most overall successful at the plate, 33% of those three or fewer pitch plate appearances were hits, 6 out of 18. In game two, it was 30%. 6 out of 20. In game three, the game with the most offensive struggle, that was down to 21%. So they were swinging a bit more frequently often. They were swinging early often in game three. And it wasn't necessarily doing the best for accumulating hits. Another key stat, which I'm sure a lot of you noticed on Sunday, in particular, was that walk rate. The team drew just a single walk in the game on Sunday for a 3% walk rate, compared to a 10% walk rate on Friday. You have to be patient to get those walks. And by and large, they weren't as patient on Sunday. And the final thing I looked at was, and this got real weird as I was trying to calculate it, the percent of strikeouts that were looking versus swinging, where swinging strikeouts are the bit more aggressive. And that Sunday game was the lowest proportion of strikeouts looking of the weekend at just 1 out of 6. So, by and large, it looks like Sunday, for whatever reason, it could be that something in the scouting says swing early and often. I don't have that kind of scouting report, but the metrics I was able to take a look at did seem to largely say that Sunday was a bit more aggressive, and it wasn't particularly helpful. Whether we see that trend continue, or, and I did not look beyond this weekend because that's a lot trying to calculate even just for a single weekend. But within the microcosm of the Minnesota series, having that little bit of extra patience. And across the board, it wasn't that much more patience, but just that little bit of patience can really pay off for this offense. So now that I've looked at some of the team-wide, at least offense-wide stats, Chris, who were your individual red belt winners this week?
All right. First off, though, I want to second what David had mentioned about Pro Bowl Hoosiers.
Yes.
He really has done a yeoman's effort for the whole time that I've known him. He was obviously doing this before I knew him, but that's how we got in touch. And it's just the way he would have German women's basketball league scores. Like, I could never comprehend this. And he would figure out the map. Like, who knows these maps? I just know he would be very good at, like, I don't know, some kind of trivia, or they have this bar stool that does in trivia where they throw maps up and like different things. And I bet he would kill it at that too. But, you know, he's been doing it for a long, long time. And I've said it before, if I had a dollar for every time somebody asks me who he is, because he does this incognito, I'd be rich. I'm telling you. But yeah, for what David, and David, I appreciate you, with you on the show. I'd like to tell you, of course, all the videos. Like, you know, Pro Bowl puts up the set, and then once you started getting on board, then we get to see what he's talking about. And it's really, I don't know, I really enjoy watching how Hoosiers go through the minors and majors and stuff. And David, you do such a good job with the video.
I
So I
appreciate
just wanted to
that.
do that too.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Good work. And I've heard from several parents, a couple of parents, I think, thought I was doing it. Like, oh, the video. I'm like, no. That's David. Well, and I tell him the thing, and I'll show him your Twitter account. I believe me, I don't know how to edit none of that. If anybody, would have been Carl. But for the Red Belts, we played Vanderbilt on St. Patrick's Day, right? And obviously that's a lucky day, and you know, the green and the whole thing. And I was thinking about it. These Red Belts, you really do have like some luck involved, right? Because you could hit two home runs and two doubles in a game and not win a Red Belt, right? You could throw six innings and go head to head with a guy pitching a no hitter and not win a red belt. So it just shows you sometimes you got to be really good and you got to be really lucky. And I think, you know, there's a lot of honorable mentions this week because it was just so much different, right? We scored late, what we said we weren't doing, right? We're adding on runs. We're coming back where maybe last year we didn't, or even earlier in the season we didn't. But a lot of good things to win three out of four. But for the red belts, you know, you got to pick something. So for the Joey Donato, I'm going Gavin Seabolt for his 12-out save. Okay. After Davin Correa, you know, added to the lead, it was a chopper to ground out. Either way, it's an RBI, right? And, you know, Myers and Mercer pulled the trigger and they bring in our big gun. Four innings, one hit. You know, all he did was get the first seven guys out, you know, and then he gave up a hit. It happens, right? Then he gets the next five guys out, striking out four of them. The last three swinging. So Gavin, 60 pitches, 13 batters, four innings, and gets the save. So he's got our Joey Donato Award for hitting. I guess you already heard who didn't win it, right? Which is shocking, right? You would have thought Denny had that thing locked up. Honestly, I thought he would have too. But Jake Hanley, he gets a four-hit game, right? And then that home run in the fifth inning, after we had tied it 2-2, he gives us the three-run lead in the fifth. That's following up a four-hit game. That's following up the fact that he had just got his 100th hit as a Hoosier in just 77 games. So Jake Hanley this week is going to be our Alex Dickerson Award winner. And for defense, I wasn't able to make it to as many games as I would have liked out of the four. Actually, I was able to get to one. But from following along and consulting some experts, it appears that, and I did see the play. I was able to see a video of it, so it was definitely a worthy play. We were it was the top of the seventh. We were up 6-2 on Saturday. We had two outs, Vogel on the mound, runner on base. Now, maybe not every outfielder goes for this ball. Maybe one lays up and just, you know, takes it on a hop. But then maybe that inning continues. Maybe they score more. But Caleb Kosky says, nah, I'm going to get it. And he comes in and he extends and he makes the grab. So Caleb Kosky is going to get our Tony Butler Award for this week. So we're going Seabold, Hanley, and Kosky for this week. And then we're going to send it over to Carl for a Big Ten update and a pick 'em update as well.
The Big Ten has set what I'm very sure is a new record today, which is there are four teams from the league that are in D1 baseball's top 25, with Nebraska joining in at number 24. They join Oregon, who moved up to number 20. USC is now up to 12, and UCLA has not moved. They are stuck in their spot because they can't move up anymore because they've been the number one team in the country all year. So I know, boy, we're all looking forward to when USC and UCLA get to play each other. I think we're only 2 weeks away from that, if I remember right. So that will be a big, big deal. So as of now, the top four in the league, and that's also in the standings, are the are all ranked teams now. So the Big Ten standings, as I said, those are your four. Nebraska is actually three over Oregon right now, but part of that's because of the number of games that they've played. The rest of the group, you've got Purdue in fifth right now, then Rutgers, Iowa, Illinois, Washington, Northwestern. IU at 3-6 in league is slotted in at 11th, which is better than a lot better than where the Hoosiers were a week ago. And that's a big, actually a very large tie with Northwestern, Minnesota, Michigan State, and Penn State. That 10 through 14 are all at the same number, broken by RPI, and that's why Indiana's a little bit higher. Northwestern's the only one in that group with a better RPI. Maryland continues to struggle. Michigan mostly has been plagued by playing really, really, really tough competition, so I don't think they're going to hang out at 16 much longer. And like last year, Ohio State is bringing up the rear. Okay, for the coming week, we've got some interesting matchups are coming up. We actually have to pick Illinois away from Illinois Field. It's always easy to pick them when they're at home. When they're going on the road, it gets a little trickier. We're not going to pick, but we will later discuss IU traveling to Nebraska, to number 24 Nebraska. Michigan goes to Rutgers. Northwestern goes to Washington. Ohio State is at Minnesota. Purdue at Michigan State. I think that's one I'm circling as mighty interesting. UCLA goes to Iowa. And South Carolina travels to Maryland. Our pick'ems right now, the best weeks were had by Cass and Chris. They only missed one each. Cass missed the Iowa series, which Chris did pick correctly. Chris was the only one to pick the Spartans. So I guess choosing by basketball is actually a pretty good strategy, it turns out.
Carl, I said it. It was January, February, Izzo, and that's why I took Sparty, and they got it for me.
The only one Chris missed was he picked Michigan when it was in, when it was Nebraska that that took that series.
Hey, Michigan won Friday night 2-1. I thought I was sitting pretty, Carl. Not so fast.
Yep. So congratulations to Cass and Chris on great weeks. Cass is now tied with me for first place. Okay, so let's get to this week. I'll actually go and start off with my picks. Boy, the first one was really tough. I'm gonna go with Penn State at home against Illinois. I'm gonna go with Michigan at Rutgers. This is probably my bold pick. I'm going to pick Northwestern on the road at Washington. I like what Northwestern has been doing lately. I think, and again, I'm not. Even though Washington won that series at the BART, I've seen them in person. They did not impress me. So I think Northwestern's poised for a nice road victory here. Easily taking Minnesota over Ohio State. think I'm gonna. Oh boy. Okay, I'm gonna go with Purdue at Michigan State. Again, that's a tough one. I'm not going against either of the Los Angeles schools. That I have no reason to go against either of the Los Angeles schools right now, so that will fill out my picks. Zach, how about you? Why don't you go next?
Yeah, so I am actually going to go with Illinois over Penn State. I think that's a little bit of a tough one, but Illinois has been playing some pretty good baseball. Carl, you said Michigan's played a tough schedule. They play Rutgers. They should take that one. I'm going to take Washington at home. They're at home, I think, against
Yes,
Northwestern.
they are.
So I'll keep them out on the West Coast. Take Minnesota over Ohio State. I will also take Purdue over Michigan State. I think that's tough. Like earlier in the year, I was watching Michigan State play Louisville. They won the series over there. I thought that they could have a really good season, but I'll still take Purdue. I think they're pretty solid. And then I'll take the two California teams as well, UCLA and USC.
Chris.
Okay, so the way I looked at this was we have quite a few Big Ten teams in the Sweet 16. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but Michigan, Purdue, Illinois, Michigan State, a team I won't mention, and Iowa are all in the Sweet 16. So I figured I would take them all to win. But then some of them started playing each other. And like one of them, like I said, I wouldn't want to mention is playing us. So it just killed the whole thing. But I did think it was pretty nice to notice that how many of the Sweet 16 of the Big Ten are there. So one of the ones where they were playing each other was Sparty and Purdue, right? So I took Sparty for that one. Let's see. I took Illinois, USC, Michigan, UCLA, Washington, and then I'm going to go with the Buckeyes. I know not too many people will probably go with that, but I'm going to go for it. I went with it with Sparty and hit. I went with Michigan against UCLA and missed. So I got to take some shots and hopefully I'll hit some of them. But those are going to be my picks for the week.
All right, and Cass.
Okay, well, I'm going Illinois over Penn State, Michigan at Rutgers. I also went Northwestern over Washington because Northwestern has surprised some people periodically. Went with Minnesota. This one was tough for me, but I gave Sparty the home field advantage there. I think that one's close to a toss-up. And then both the California schools. I'm not picking against them until I have a reason to, or they play each other. That's about it at this point.
Yeah, we're all going to be forced to make that pick, I think, pretty soon. All right. Well, there's some baseball to be played very soon, probably the morning you're listening to this. So Zach's got our preview for the Fightin' Trees.
Whenever I am done covering this team and I think back to a Tuesday or a Wednesday, I'm always going to think Indiana's playing Indiana State. I don't know why. I feel like they're always playing each other, but this will be the 118th meeting between the two. Indiana leads 67, the record 67, 49 and 1. But this series has actually been pretty close since 2023. The teams are 3-3 against each other. So, always a tough one against the Sycamores. This year they are 10-13, 2-1 in their conference though. But they've had a couple similarities to Indiana in terms of opponents. They won a series against Penn State in the Bahamas, who Indiana obviously shares the conference with. Indiana State lost 2 of 3 to Western Kentucky, a team that Indiana split a 4-game series with. The Sycamores are coming off of a 3-1 week as well, where they beat Illinois in the midweek and they took 2 of 3 from Bradley, who Indiana also beat in a midweek game this year. In terms of the hitters for Indiana State, outfielder Carter Beck, he leads the team with a .319 batting average, 30 hits in the season, 8 doubles. They have Caden Miller, who's also above .300. This team's been playing really well. Nick Sutherland, he had 6 hits this past weekend. Andrew Ortiz, he's reached base 10 times in the last 15 plate appearances. Emil Estrella, this guy, he closed out the series where they won it 18-10 on Sunday afternoon. He closed out the series with 2 grand slams and 9 RBIs, leading Indiana State to that series win. So they've really been swinging it well as a team. They lead the Missouri Valley. And they're also 24th in the NCAA in team doubles. That's with 53. 21st in doubles per game in the entire country with 2.3 per game. So, they can always tack on some extra bases, especially in these midweek games where you see so many different pitchers. So, they actually listed on their site there's about four relievers that all righties that you're probably projected to see tomorrow. It's just another classic Tuesday game where you're going to see at least five or six arms from each team. Jacob Spencer, Colby Morse, Ryan Karst, and Owen Roberts. All those guys around a 4-6 ERA range. So Indiana has an opportunity to swing the bat again, as they've been doing recently this past week. Connor Lynn gets the start for Indiana. This is where I think this is a big one. On a Tuesday, you get Connor Lynn on the bump coming off of a win against Vanderbilt, where he looked really strong, especially a left-handed pitcher in a midweek game that can throw strikes. That is something that many teams don't have, actually. So I think Lynn could have a big week here and move into the weekend a bit. Obviously, we heard that from Coach Mercer on Sunday, where Regan Rivera has been hit or miss. And you go to Connor Lynn, that can give you strikes on a weekend. So I think tomorrow is big for him. Ivan Mostolski as well. We'll get into this in our discussion. But some of those guys that have moved from the midweek and have performed and can move into the weekend. So tomorrow's big for the Hoosier Southpaw, Connor Lynn. First pitch is set for 6 p.m. As always, an alumni, we all know Larry Bird, but you can see Chris is wearing his Mets stuff. And
I
I
know
saw
what you're going to say.
recently, so Indiana State went down when they were coming back from the Bahamas. They played the University of Miami in Coral Gables, and Sean Manaea was sitting in the bullpen with the Sycamores. That was a game they actually only let up one or two runs. Miami won it 2-1, but they pitched it really well. Sean Manaea might have been behind that. So Chris, opening day just a couple weeks ago or a couple days away. Sorry. And Sean Manaea from the Mets, former Sycamore. So,
A big reason why we did well in the playoffs in 24 and battled Carl's Dodgers was Manaea's switching up his pitching wind up and the way he decided to go all the way out and come all the way in. Guys couldn't hit him. So maybe he was talking to those relievers about that. I don't know. It definitely worked though.
all right, so now we will hand it to Chris, who is going to preview the upcoming series at now number 24, Nebraska.
okay, and Zach mentioned it. I am looking forward to the game on Thursday, which is Mets Pirates. Okay, 1 o'clock. My new ace Peralta against the ace of aces, Paul Skenes. So obviously, be locked in on that Thursday at about 1:15. And if you want to check out the Mets and you got Peacock, which I know a lot of us do for your basketball, check it out. It's on. You can watch it on that. You don't need the anything else. It's going to be on Peacock. So that's the first game of the day on opening day. So it's a big deal, I feel like. March 26th this year is our opening day. And I wish good luck to all the teams out there, unless you're playing the Mets, and definitely if you're playing the Yankees. So we're going to go with the preview of Nebraska. Now, the games are at Hawks Field at Haymarket Park, Friday at 7 Eastern, Saturday at 3 Eastern, Sunday at 1 Eastern. And these guys are legit. They're 18-6 on the season. They're 5-1 in the Big Ten. They're 9-0 at home. They're ranked 24. Carl just pointed it out. They did lose to Michigan at Michigan Friday night, came back, beat them Saturday, run ruled them Saturday, and then beat them on Sunday. So this is a good ball team. And it's not like they're always fundamentally sound. We know this. Nebraska's been a thorn in our side for years. I feel like after Schwarber hit that bomb in the Big Ten tournament in 14, they've had our number, whether it's been a road series here or there, if it's the Big Ten tournament. Kind of like Zach's Marlins are the thorn in the Mets' damn side every year. And Nebraska seems to be the Hoosiers. You got to call a spade a spade. We have lost plenty of games to this team, whether it's been at the BART, whether it's been on the road, or it's been in the Big Ten tournament. But this version, like I said, is 18-6. Last year, they were 33-29, won the Big Ten tournament, going 4-0, undefeated, beat Oregon and UCLA to do it. So, pretty impressive there. We didn't play them once last year. I wasn't mad about it because we never damn beat them. So I wasn't mad at all. Nebraska went to the Chapel Hill Regional. They lost once to Oklahoma. They beat Holy Cross. They lost to Oklahoma again. So then they were eliminated. But hey, they made the region. They made the regionals. So hats off to them, of course. If it comes to some pitchers that we will be seeing, it looks like they have a pretty set Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and they're all righties. Ty Horn is the Friday. He's 0-1 with a 3 ERA. Carson Jaza is 4-1 with a 4 ERA. And then Gavin Blackholtz for Sunday is 2-1 with a 2.8 ERA. So the starters are solid, and I know Carl spoke to coach about it in the post game, and he actually pointed it out that Carl had such a good question. And a few days later, we seem to get these starters, right? It's then the relievers come in. But I think these are going to be, since North Carolina, I think these are going to be some of the better starters we faced. So we'll see how we could face against them. As far, oh, and there's a reliever that we know, Cooper Kotsky. He was a Hoosier. He's 3-0 with two saves, 34 Ks, and 25 innings. So what he seems to do is pitch a little on the midweek and then pitch a little on the weekend. And he's done very well. His last outing was a little rocky against Michigan, from what I looked at. But I mean, those are some great numbers. As far as bats, I found two that we're definitely going to want to keep an eye on. There's a senior infielder, Dylan Carey. He leads the team in home runs, RBIs, and total bases. So it's 6 homers, 31 RBIs, 69 total bases. And then Mac Meyer, or Moyer, probably is how you say it, a senior outfielder. He leads the team in batting average, 409. His on base percentage is 520. So, and he has 9 doubles. So he gets on base all the time. We're gonna, have to keep, this is gonna be a challenge out there for the road weekend. As far as alumni, Shelly Smith. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Shelly Smith. She's a broadcaster for ESPN, sideline reporter. We also have Warren Buffett, quite the investor, if you know Warren. He might be out at the games. And for MLB players, one that I definitely know David knows, is it Spencer? How do you pronounce it? Schellenbach, David?
Yeah,
For the
Schwalbach.
Braves?
Yeah.
How do you say it?
Schwalbach. I think he was a shortstop mostly with Nebraska, but pitched
Oh, he
well.
pitched too, though. He did. He would come
Yeah.
out and he would pitch in relief.
Yeah.
I
But
remember.
yeah, he's been a big part of the Braves rotation since he's been called up. I think he's come back from injury a bit. No, but he's stepped in a big been a big addition to the Braves rotation.
Pitched very well against the Mets, I know for a fact. No, he has. I'm like, this guy, I know this guy. He used to beat the Hoosiers and now he's beating us. And they called him up quick, didn't they?
Yeah, he didn't spend tons of time in the minors. I think he was pretty dominant down there. So they pretty much fast-tracked him right up Atlanta.
Yeah, so he's on the Braves. Alex Gordon for the Royals, a lot of you guys know. And I don't know age-wise how everybody is who's listening to this, but there was a Yankee playoff game that had a lot of bugs, and they were flying over all the players, and they were landing on them, and it was out in Cleveland. I don't know, there was just something with the bugs out there. And Jabba Chamberlain was the pitcher when the bugs came out, and he was a Yankee reliever. So you Google that, Google Jabba Chamberlain and the bugs, and you'll see something you don't see at an MLB ballpark very often. So that's pretty much our preview. Like I said, it's Friday at 7 Eastern, Saturday at 3 Eastern, and Sunday at 1. And of course, Major League Baseball opening day Thursday at 1.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get into our group discussion. So obviously last week, it, for the most part, was encouraging. But we kind of just want to talk about what do we think a 3-1 week, what we saw last week, what that really means for this team going forward. We'll let Zach kick us off for this part of it.
I like to look at this on a week-to-week basis, where even just a week ago we were saying Indiana needs to just find a way in the Big Ten tournament, and because they're going to have to play, I think Carl, you said it was about 800 the rest of the way or something around there. So they got to go 3-1 every single week if they want an at-large bid. Where they went 3-1 this week, and Tuesday is obviously a huge RPI boost with a win over Vanderbilt, and not just in terms of the metrics and the stats and all that. They held Vanderbilt, an SEC offense, to one run on a midweek while using guys that, maybe in the recent weeks haven't been performing as they have liked. But as I mentioned in the Indiana State preview, Connor Lynn, he pitched really well in that one, and Ivan Mostalski followed that up. I think both of those guys are primed to move into the bullpen on the weekend where they're pitching in higher leverage roles. So that's why tomorrow's big for Lynn, just to go out there and throw strikes again. But Mostalski, we've seen him on the weekends now. I think Lynn has a chance to go there. I look at the Tuesday game, and Hogan Denny did it all, obviously. Two home runs, two doubles, just a ridiculous performance. He carried the entire load for the offense, and the pitching did its part. So they win that one. I sent out that big tweet that Indiana has moved to 4-0 in midweek games. So that's something that, I don't want to say I'm surprised, but something that has kind of plagued them in recent years, where they just lose to these opponents on a Tuesday evening. So that's very encouraging to be 4-0. Tomorrow's another chance at 5. And then you move into the weekend. I was only able to be there on Saturday, which was actually one of the cleanest games I've ever seen Indiana play, really. But Friday, I think, actually, Friday and Saturday, the fifth inning was very kind to Indiana's hitters. On Friday, that's where they tied the game at 6-6 on a Hanley home run, and then finished that inning up 8-6, and Siebold went in there, and Gavin Siebold, four inning save. He has been performing as well as any pitcher in the country, any reliever in the country. He has been absolutely dominant, struck out the side to end it. Just unbelievable what he's done this year. And then the following day, on the fifth inning, was when Indiana was hitless through four, and Braden Ricketts, Cole Decker went back to back. Jake Hanley hit a 3-run home run, so that was a 5-run fifth inning. So that has been really nice to Indiana this past weekend. They Landon Fry and Caleb Koski added to that to make it 7-2. Indiana won the series on a Saturday, which I thought was a big point, where you had an opportunity into Sunday to go and sweep. They hadn't used that many pitchers, but obviously that one was a little more lopsided than expected. But a 3-1 week, I think that's where they're going to have to be the rest of the year for an at-large bid, which is still obviously extremely tough to do. But undefeated in midweeks, 3-1 week. You got a chance this coming week to get a ranked win or two with a midweek win at home tomorrow. So that's where I stand. I think we all feel better about this following the Minnesota weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to reflect a little bit on both that, but also to kind of what Cass talked about in her stats piece. Really watching them right now, I'm actually glad they're not being patient. First of all, I thought patience, and this is, I'll take this from Coach. Coach was actually saying they went from beyond patient to being passive. And I also think the word has kind of gotten out, and the scouting report on IU is, kind of they realize that you don't want to nibble with IU, because if you nibble with IU, you're going to get stuck into a point where you're going to be behind, and you got to throw a pitch that they can hit. So I think the scouting report is to attack. And if they're going to attack, you got to hit early. Because you got to hit the pitch that's in the location you want. If you decide you're going to wait and you get down 1-2, 0-2, then it's a lot more difficult at that point. And of course, these things are going to fluctuate back and forth, because now teams are going to look at the Friday and Saturday tape and say, yeah, maybe going after these guys isn't the right idea. Maybe we need to nibble a little bit more. And then it may be turn around that maybe at Nebraska, it being more patient. But for them, I really think patient simply means that, I mean, Coach is pretty clear on it. Every pitch, they've got a zone they're looking at. We don't necessarily know what zone that is, what part of the strike zone they're looking at, but there's a part of the strike zone that they're looking for. And if the ball's not in that zone, they're taking it. I think it's the point he said, this is when Jake hit his home run, Coach asked him, what kind of a pitch was that? And he goes, I have no idea. I just know it was up and o it was up and out and over the plate.
I
And Coach said,
was
I like that answer because he's looking for a zone, not a pitch. So.
sitting behind home plate on Saturday, Isaac Morton, I gotta say, there haven't been many times this season at the BART where I have sat there and I was kind of astonished at a pitcher and his stuff. Isaac Morton had Indiana hitless through four. I was sitting there and I was thinking, I don't know if they're going to get a hit today. And in that fifth inning, with their six and seven hitters due up, I think that's where Cole Decker was, or Ricketts was first. So Ricketts was hit a home run to left field for the first hit of the game that was on a fastball away. They could not hit the guy's fastball through four innings. And he was throwing a slider that looked like he was throwing a frisbee out there. And they went with the zone and they put the ball the other way. And then Decker did the same. And then Hanley did the same. That approach won them the game in the fifth inning. I thought that they may have gotten no hit through however many pitches the guy was going to throw that day. And they really flipped that quickly and won the series because of it. Because if you don't win that game on Saturday, if you don't hit there, then you have another close rubber match on Sunday where you never know what's going to happen. So that Saturday, hitting the fastballs to the opposite field, three lefties hitting three home runs to left field. That's what really stood out to me for this entire weekend, just that one inning.
Yeah. And the point is, these guys have seen some incredible arms. The guys at North Carolina, the Friday starter at Oregon, I'd say I didn't see him in person. I've seen him on tape a lot. He's just very impressive. But I almost think Morton might be the best of all of them that I've seen, particularly in those four innings. He was just amazing, and it's different than the Washington pitchers who, while they were locating really well, the stuff wasn't all that great, and it was kind of head scratching why IU couldn't get something together against them. It was a good, a really good thing to see from Zach's point that they made the adjustments they needed to make and started producing some runs.
Yeah, and to me, what stood out a little bit, even though, again, it ended up not going great on Sunday, was I think this pitching staff has the depth to counter one bum night from a starter or one bum game from a starter. As soon as a second starter struggles, it's probably going to go downhill quickly. But I think if Thomas had had a more usual start for him, I think it probably would have been, it would have been at least competitive, if not fine.
Yeah, and they would have used Sarhat and Jacoby as again, but coach was
Would
very
have done
specific. I was
things
like, I'm
differently.
not using those guys if we're down by 10 runs. So,
Right. That it becomes a whole different thing. And some of that again goes to the offense of you need the offense to do at least something. But that was encouraging for me that they were able to pick up from Rivera when he had an off night. And then Saturday was a bit more to plan. Offense was a little bit late, but joined the party partway through. As long as it, as long as no more than one starter has a real off game, I think this team can actually compete
I absolutely
for
agree. Yeah.
the whole weekend. And you wouldn't think that with the way the game ended up, but some guys we don't normally see got some innings, and some of it was very good. So I know that's kind of silver lining from a big storm cloud, but that is something you have to take into account. And if you don't have it, you don't have it. Don't throw guys just to throw.
Yeah, and there's a reason you've got guys like Pete Haas on the staff. Is somebody who generally can throw strikes and can get some outs and help you just get through a game. And also be willing to come in when it's a really tough situation, runners on, and he's veteran enough to not get flustered by it and just go compete. Those guys, I mean, the numbers don't look good, but Every team needs guys like that. They need those guys that are willing to go out there and wear it every now and then. And Pete Haas has been that for this team. To your point, Cass, it'd be nice to be able to stick to the more dominant guys, but because you're in the game and you, well, I think your point on that is that they had in a weekend series they had two starters basically combined for not three innings, and they won the series. That's pretty impressive. And one of the other things impressive is overall, Minnesota impressed me as a team. I feel better about Minnesota after that series. IU just outplayed them in two games, and did some very impressive things. So that's one of those things. It's like I compare. Like I said, I have no question right now that if Minnesota and Washington played each other, I would take Minnesota 9 times out of 10. Despite the fact that the results with IU were the opposite, because I felt that the results with IU were IU's issues, not those teams' issues.
I also look back during going into the Washington or the Oregon weekend. That's when they moved Tony Newbeck back a day, and that could be a difference maker down the line. I mean, even this coming weekend against Nebraska, where you're going to see like a legitimate ace pitcher on a Friday, that you have Newbeck going Saturday, and this past Saturday with the way that Isaac Morton was dealing through four, if you got a bad start from anybody else. And you're in a hole with Morton going like that. I mean, they probably don't win that game. And so Newbeck keeps them in it, and the offense finally came about in the fifth. So I think that's a huge thing. And also, I don't know if we've mentioned this at all, that Jackson Bergman is out for the season, which is a real hit to the starting rotation, of course. But they have Regan Rivera, Connor Lynn, as we mentioned, guys that can step up and eat some innings on a weekend.
And I think it's going to be really interesting. We're going to pay attention, particularly if the game's close tomorrow. What the assortment looks like of pitchers going afterwards, particularly who doesn't pitch. I'm really curious to see, because I think it's going to come down to who opens on Friday is going to be either Rivera or Mostalski. And it will be whichever one of them we do not see tomorrow. And I'm really curious to see how that comes out. 'Cause honestly, I just don't know. If I'm reading the coach the way I think I am, I'm leaning towards we're gonna see Rivera tomorrow and Mostalsi is gonna open on Friday.
I agree.
Has
Yeah,
he earned it? I mean, he's earned it.
he's earned it, but also that the fact that you go into a road environment and you have a pitcher like Rivera who has been on it sometimes, and then there's some games where he can't find the zone, or he can't establish the fastball or something. So I think you just get more consistency. You have a little bit more leeway having Mostalski go in there. So that would be my prediction as well.
Yeah, he deserves it. It's like spring training, right? These guys are fighting to make the rosters, opening day rosters. If you looked at each guy's body of work, Mostalski earns it easily. And you know what? Okay, we could look at Statcast, and because Rivera shines on some of the Statcast stuff. I know he does, but he's gone out there and twice has thrown a 4-run first inning. So Mostalski hasn't done that. He's earned it. I say give him a shot now. Let him start. Zach's point, we've moved Tony to Saturday. So, not that Mostalky's our Friday night guy, but he would pitch on Friday. And I think that makes a lot of sense. As far as the weekend, it's completely encouraging, right? Usually, I don't want to quote people on Twitter with the nonsense they write, but a guy wrote something and he said, if we can have two great wins like Friday and Saturday, I'll take what happened today, which was Sunday. And I agree. And I'll add to that an unexpected road win where we never win. Right? What was it, Carl? The last time I could remember us winning at Vanderbilt, we were playing Radford. We weren't even playing them. I don't
Triple
think we've
play.
won there. When's the last time we won at Vanderbilt?
I think it's got to be then.
Yeah. So you got an unexpected win against an SEC team. You got two nice comeback wins. I didn't see this coming, and I'm very encouraged going forward. And it's a great time to have this momentum against a team we don't beat very much.
And I also want to mention over the last 2 weeks, so I guess the last 2 weekends plus midweek, this defense has committed a single error.
One.
Against Vandy. It was,
Jeez.
I mean, that's 2 consecutive clean weekends in the field.
Yeah, they're defending 973 right now, which is you not a number you're used to seeing from an Indiana team.
And I remember you talked to Cooper about that, didn't you, in the post game? And like you could feel, I was listening to it. I didn't see it, but I could feel in his voice like pride. Like, yeah, we've been working on this. Like these pitchers break their ass for us. Like we need to play better on defense. And I think they're really taking it as a pride thing. I don't think they knew what was going on before wasn't acceptable.
Well, yeah, and not just that, but they're going beyond that now and they're stealing outs. That's the big thing. I mean,
And I,
you even had Denny throwing out a runner on Sunday. You mentioned the Red Belt winning play that Koski had. Denny had a fantastic grab. And Matt Denny, sorry, Decker, Cole Decker had a
Decker.
fantastic grab on Sunday.
Oh, at the center, right. When the game was out of hand, it was going to was a, he wasn't quite in Wisconsin, but he was over
But pretty close to it.
there. I saw that.
I think that's exactly how Austin Render
I love that he
described
does
it.
that so much.
I also do want to give a shout out to Aiden Stewart. He got back out there on defense. He made the routine easy play, and then he made the insanely not routine play. And so that was, even if he's not in there consistently, I know he's only had like 10 at bats and 6 of them have been strikeouts. That's small sample size stuff. I'm not super concerned about that. But to see him back out there in the field and making both the easy play and the hard play in, it might have been the same inning or consecutive innings, even if he's not consistently starting or the guy, that opens up so much flexibility to pinch hit when needed.
Well, they need pinch hitters. That's one thing this team is the team is lacking. There is an issue in the number of really good hitting options. And the fact that you do get, and I'll say this, TJ Skyler is great bunter, and he could hit, and he hit well last year, but he
He just
hasn't
can't find
gotten
it
it
this year.
together this year. And there's just times when they just can't risk it in a big moment to let TJ hit in some of those situations. And
Well,
they're gonna need a guy like Stewart to step up and be who he was at Delaware and be that guy again.
and even situation kind of like where he came in after a pinch hit. I don't know what it is with poor Fry. But he is a double play magnet in the worst time spot. Bases loaded, one out, double play, consistently. Even Austin Render spoke one into existence this weekend. And so having that flex, because you really didn't have a fielding option consistently to that you could rely on to pinch hit Fry, have anybody pinch hit Fry, because you needed someone to go in there and play second base, and they just weren't confident in any of the options there. So having Stewart available even opens up that as well.
And let's
Yeah,
not
it's
invent any more new ways to get into double plays.
no,
We've
no,
done that
we're
enough now.
We've been inventive enough. We don't need to do it anymore.
The two
And as
runners
far as
going to third
Aiden,
base, let's not try
yes.
that again.
And as far as Aiden, he might have made the routine play and he made the amazing play. And the amazing play might have been more impressive, but the routine play was more important. And that, I think, we all know that he made that routine play and had all the time in the world to think about that night in North Carolina, and he still made it, is more important. And that is, I really think, I'm glad you brought that up, Cass.
All right. Any more points we want to make as a group? David, anything you wanted to chime in with?
Yeah, I just been sitting here ruminating on the fact that I forgot to mention Andrew Saul Frank as well. Yeah, unfortunately, he's going to be out the season with shoulder surgery. So about 20 minutes after I mentioned, I was like, oh, I forgot to talk about Saul Frank. No, he's the major part of that that Diamondbacks World Series team. Pitched great last year, but unfortunately, suffered a shoulder injury in the offseason. And of course, the player we talked about before we came online, Paul Cerruto as well, has been, I think he's entering his second or third season as the Yankees bullpen catcher. No, it's one of those roles in a team that, kind of goes overlooked, but no, just the ability to do that and manage a bullpen is major. And I think if we think back in recent Hoosier players, a leader like Cerruto is no, he's cut for that role. So, no, two players that I didn't mention that I wanted to get in there as well.
And one other, I guess one other point to make is that Dustin Glant is going to be the bullpen coach for the Nationals this year. So on the in the Major League club. So former IU coach will be coaching at the Major League level as well.
And then Casey Dykes is an assistant hitting coach with the Yankees as well.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more information on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Chris Feeney, Zach Horwitz, Cassidy Palmer, and David Welch, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.